Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You know how when someone asks you, how are you, you just say fine, even if you're totally dying inside, so everyone can just go about their day. In each episode of the award-winning podcast, Terrible, Thanks for Asking, host Nora McKerney asks real people to share their complicated and honest feelings about how they really are, whether they're experiencing grief, trauma, failure, or everything in between. It's sometimes sad, sometimes funny, often both. So subscribe to Terrible, Thanks for Asking wherever you listen to podcasts. You're listening to Griefcast with me, Cariad Lloyd. Griefcast is a place to talk, share and laugh about the peculiar human process of death and grief. Each week I talk to a different person about their experiences of grief and death as we remember someone that they have lost along the way, whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club. Welcome to Griefcast. Hey Griefsters, I hope you're having an okay week wherever you're listening. If you've joined me thanks to the Spotlight editorial program from Apple Podcasts, thank you, welcome. Thank you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're choosing Griefcast, I know everyone's podcast time is finite. There's so many podcasts out there. So it's very exciting that you've chosen me. So I just want you to know I really appreciate it genuinely. And thank you for your lovely comments on this new season as well. I've been blown away, as I always am, by how amazing my audience are. So thank you. This week, I'm talking to the incredible Yola. Yola is a musician, a singer, an actor. She is a Grammy-nominated musician. She is about to appear as Sister Rosetta Tharpe in the new Baz Luhrmann film about Elvis Presley. Her new album, Stand For Myself, is out now, and she's an extraordinarily talented woman. You would probably recognise her voice as well. She's sung on lots of other songs. I was really honoured that Yola gave me her time to speak to me. She came in to talk to me about her mum, who died of motor neuron disease when Yola and herself were estranged. Yola, I have to say straight away, your new album is so good.
Yes!
It is so good. I have not stopped listening to it.
Yes! Like, that's what I wanted.
Oh my God, I have been boogieing away to it so much. And you know when you think, I've got to stop listening because I want to enjoy this, but I keep doing the repeat. I'm like, no, do it again, put it on again, put it on again. And I had it on. My daughter obsessively listens to music in the morning, and so at the moment she's on a real 80s flex, so like, okay. We've been listening to like hardcore, like Whitney Houston 80s stuff, which is fine, but then quite a lot of Bryan Adams has been creeping in. And this morning I was like, oh, do you want to listen to something new? And she was like, is it, like, she only likes upbeat stuff, so she was like, is it fast? She's four, by the way. Yeah. And I played your album and she was like, this is good. This is good. So we listened to it again this morning. I was like, yes, got a break from Summer of 69, which was really good, to be honest. I'm a great track, but it's nice to not hear it for the 17th day in a row. But congratulations, because it's such a good album.
Thanks.
So good.
I was in charge of more, and every one time someone tells me I like this, I really, really like this though, I'm like, good, because I was in charge of loads of stuff, so that means you like me more.
Yeah, it was it's such a good, it's like, yeah, it's really, oh, I mean, I loved it. Maybe we'll get onto this, because I loved it because it's got that sneaky thing of being very upbeat, and then you tune in, you're like, this song is actually about something sad.
Yes.
But you're like listening to it going like, woo, yeah, the great divide, yeah, yeah. And then you're like, hang on a minute, what's she saying? oh, hang on a minute. But I love stuff like that because it makes you, it really grabs you rather than just being like, oh, those are just throwaway lines and this is just a poppy song. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. Time and place for that, obviously. Mm-hmm. But yeah, congratulations because it is absolutely brilliant.
Thank you. So
yeah, Yola, I know it was a personal album, and perhaps that's connected as well to my next question, which is, who are we remembering today?
We are remembering my mother, who... Yes.
What was her name?
Her name was Margaret. Oh. Margaret Courtney. She was from St. Michael in Barbados. And she came to the UK on the Windrush. And she came to join the NHS as a registered nurse. And she started as a staff nurse and then trained up until she was SEN. And main things is she could find a vein in the dark. She could find a vein blind. She could just, bow, found a vein.
I love those nurses.
Found a vein. Found a vein.
I don't have, I have bad experiences of the nurse, you know, the early nurse. It's like, yeah, I think I can do this. And you're like, no, get the one who can do it. Like, yeah. I don't want you. I want the one that can find it every time because my veins are bad. And they're like, I'll be fine. And then, like, you know, five tourniquets later, they're like, I'm going to go and get Margaret. And you're like, yeah, get the lady that can do it.
Like 100%. And it was always the case. And it's kind of like, my mother's story isn't the happiest of stories by any stretch of the imaginations. It's not really a mystery that people from Windrush aren't being treated desperately well. And this isn't the first time they've had a dreadful time of you know. And so, like, her expertise, her ability to find a vein, like, you got to a point of, like, just being good at everything. And if you were an ethnic minority, there was a ceiling. And you'd never get to these management roles. They'd never get you to RMN version level, basically, where you would then, or, you know, to be in charge of the ward altogether. It was always, you would train everyone to supersede you. That's kind of what the narrative was. And I remember just growing up knowing, like, all of this. She'd be like, oh, I'm going to be training someone else to supersede me soon. Like, and I was always... that young blonde girl who couldn't find your vein and still can't find your vein, but has got enough training, enough that she knows about some of the managerial stuff, and she gets older and older, and then she finally supersedes you, and you're still there doing what you're doing until you inevitably retire. And so, like, that was a lot of my mother's experience, you know.
Yeah.
That was her connection to being here. And the idea was to make enough money and then move back to Barbados and, like, build somewhere nice and just chill down. And but, like, a lot of the land that used to be available didn't exist anymore. It had been bought up. Like, people's meemaws. They grew up on a plot of land. A bunch of other people grew up on a plots of land across the coast into town. My mother's plot was more into town. But, you know, they dream, oh, I'll just get somewhere a bit closer to the coast and, like, I'll build something there. That's no longer an option when, you know what people talk about, like, when they develop places and they move someone off a plot.
Yeah.
Because they want to build a bypass, or they want to build a hotel, or they want to build, like, some modern flats or whatever they want to do, and there's one holdout grandma that's like, no, I know the value of my, you know, like, there was so much baiting and switching going on, because at that time, like, you know, I don't think people are as savvy as they are nowadays. Now everyone knows, like, you hang on to your plot
kind
of situation.
Well, yeah, sure. But someone swung along with talk of, you know, a big cash money and you think, oh, well, okay, yeah, sure, I'll take that. Because, yeah, the days before all the development had been developed, it's hard to imagine.
Yeah, but it is, but you don't know, like, the value of, like, where you are.
Yeah.
And so the idea of, like, waiting until someone passes and then going, oh, we'll give you this for it. kind of thing. So there was no going back.
So she stayed. Because so she much stayed of here.
Yeah, she did. She stayed in the UK and in Portishead, just outside of Bristol.
Wow. And what happened? How did she die?
She died of motor neurones disease, which I know it's literally like your body becomes a prison very slowly. Yeah.
And when was she diagnosed with that? Do you, obviously you remember that diagnosis, because it's quite, I had a friend's mum passed away of the same thing, and it's quite, it can be a prolonged process, a prolonged period of illness.
Yeah, well, here's the kind of the caveat of when my mother was diagnosed. We were estranged. Right. I spent a lot of time trying to make some sense of our relationship. She had all of the tenements of a clinical psychopath.
Right.
Which can be funny sometimes.
Yes,
but like, is, no, it really can be. But like, I've often described her as the black female Cartman from South Park. Like, she's like, she was that wrong
right.
in her humour.
Okay.
And, but sometimes as a result of that, kind of funny.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But like, but as Cartman is in South Park, sometimes just no, just don't, no, no.
Not there,
why
don't
are you
go there.
Saying that?
There is bad.
Don't go there. Like, I don't know how disgusting and how blue these things normally get, but we're going to talk about my old dear. She was, there's one story I have to, we'll get into this at some point.
No, you can be, you can say, it's but not like, it yeah,
was,
go for it.
It was so, it's, okay, so for an example, there was one Christmas, I was trying to force a sense of family. So, because no one would do that, because like I had these things called feelings, and that made me loathsome apparently because of emotions. Oh, you know, I write songs of all my, like my songs have like, there's a little bit of sadness, there's a lot of sentimentality. I've always been this sentimental baby, there's nothing I can do about it. So it's Christmas time and I've decided I'm cooking, me my partner at the time are cooking, and I'm just in the kitchen, and she starts telling the story about when she used to work on a psych ward, and she, like, I'm not going to go through all of them because there's so much politically incorrect stuff. It's just like, I'm like, wow, ma, woo, first meeting the boyfriend, and like, we're going straight in with the, with this, okay. But one of the politically incorrect things, now, if you think of Cartman from South Park telling this message, this story, and then realize it isn't him, this isn't an excerpt from South Park, this was my late mother. she would say, oh, so she talked once, in short, about how she used to work with this young redhead on the ward, and most of the time it was her and this Filipino lady who were like besties, and they were, well, they were, it was two of them to a ward of 60, and like they were like the classic overworked underpaid kind of paradigm, that'll all be fine, but occasionally there'd be like an extra nurse on, and it was this redhead girl, and she talked to her, and apparently like she was in a relationship that wasn't going great or whatever. Anyway, long story short, she puts in as an aside, did you know that Down syndrome people can tend to be well endowed? Anyway, long story short, she finds Nursey atop one of these late teens pitching tents, like every morning, as if by magic, every morning it was tent pitching time, like just like even across the ward, like tent pitching hour, and like everyone knew it was tent pitching hour, and this was Christmas dinner.
Yeah, it's not like this opening gambit for traditional Christmas dinner with your daughter and her partner.
No. And I'm trying to tell this grossly inappropriate story as cleanly as I can.
Yeah, I can tell
muster.
You're like searching for the clean version of the story, because it's so, I can tell how inappropriate it is, that what's going on. Oh my God.
I'm like, and so, like, we just fell off our chairs laughing.
Yeah, what else can
I couldn't
do?
Even
yeah.
stay upright because I was like, this is the wrongest and the funniest shit I have ever know of in my life. Because who does this? Oh, who goes? And so after she'd done with the story, I was like, Merry Christmas! And like, yeah, we fell over. I invited some friends round. Like, we all just hit the deck. It was, I was just like, well, now you've met her.
Yeah, I feel
like my stories will never, ever come up to this.
Yeah. Oh, my God. And yeah. did she think she was being funny, or did she just were telling you matter-of-factly, like, what was going on her ward that day?
I definitely think she thought she was being funny, but okay. I don't think she ever knew how funny she was being.
Right, yeah.
I think she'll be like, oh, this is a jaunty little tale. I don't think she ever thought, this is so gross. And the way she described things, I was like, oh my gosh, there's so much bigotry in everything you're saying. Oh my God. Like, it was, so yeah, she was an event. Let's just make this clear. Okay. My mother was a full-scale event. And sometimes so hilarious, your face is going to fall clean off your skull. And sometimes so cringeworthy, your face is going to fall clean off your skull. Like, whichever way it is, there's going to be a strong reaction. My yeah. mother's, interacting with mother was not a weak reaction option. And sometimes she managed to gauge the spirit of things,
yeah.
and people will go, oh, she's loads of fun. I'm like, oh, so you got her at the right level.
Yeah, you got the good one.
Great, cool, lucky you, boo. yeah, but like, obviously, because of the myriads of just inability to understand humanity and how we tether ourselves together as a society, there'd be all sorts of things that would fly out of her mouth that were
yeah.
toxic.
Yeah.
And lots of realizations that would never come to her because of the way her brain worked. And she was fiercely practical.
Yeah.
So,
but not
she
emotional.
She was good at loads of stuff.
Just like, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No. Anything that she did, even things, she did loads of good stuff, but it was a lot of, like, it's like, this is why I described her as Cartman, because you know sometimes Cartman on South Park would do something and you go, oh, this looks like Cartman actually doing a nice thing.
Right,
and
yeah.
you go, wait a minute, what's the, I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop here.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
what's the real motivation?
Oh,
right. Oh, it's revenge. Oh, it's some, or it's some really kind of like inappropriate generalization of a whole group, which is why he's done, like there was always like another shoe waiting to drop moment.
Yeah.
That was just like, wait a minute, I'm gonna, why are you doing this?
What happened when you
that's depressing. But you know, but hey, people are benefiting, so I'm not gonna piss on your chips.
Yeah.
And like,
what happened when you and first was, when you first watched South Park, were you like, oh, I recognize this?
Yeah.
Like, did you have a moment of like, oh, that's, yeah, I know.
It was uncanny.
Wow.
I was like, it's mum. It's mum.
Wow.
The butt of the joke of this entire series is mum.
Wow.
Oh, dude. And but I didn't understand like what Cartman was modeled on.
Yeah.
So Cartman is modeled on clinical psychopathy.
Yeah.
And so the time I realized was when I read through the encyclopedia definition of psychopathy, and it felt like I was reading my mother's diary.
Wow.
And I was like, and so then like I sent it to anyone that like knew her. I went, who does this remind you of? And they're like, Margaret, duh. I'm like,
yeah,
this is, I'm gonna resend this to you with the heading. And they're like, oh, dude.
Dude.
I'm like, play. Dude. It was so.
How old were you when you read that? Like, how old were you when you kind of were like, oh.
20s.
Okay.
20s.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
So, like, better late than never, I suppose. But,
yeah.
but Jesus.
Yeah.
Like, I could have used that information earlier. Let's put it that way.
I think it's hard. I've spoken to other people, with, you know, with similar things, with parents that had what we would now describe, I guess, of like a mental disorder or something. And they all seem to not find out until they read a book at like in their 20s. And they're like, hang on a minute. I thought that was just, you know, how parents are. And then they're like, whoa, that's not... Or they start speaking to people as they sort of leave their circle of friends that like know the mum. Do you know what I mean? So they're like, oh, that's just your mum.
Yeah.
And you go to university or something, or you leave that your town and you explain to someone. My friend had a thing like this. And as she was explaining it to other people, they were like, that sounds weird. And she was like, no, that's just... That's my parent, right? And they were like, no, that's
no.
That sounds weird. But I think it's hard when you've grown up with it, right? Because it's hard to be, like you said, it's your normal. And I guess if everyone knows her as that, you know. And it's interesting, isn't it? She was a nurse, because obviously to be a nurse, like part of the skill of a nurse is to be really practical and not let your emotions get bubble over. Like, so yeah, she must have been a really good nurse.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Society rewards psychopathy. This is the problem. Like, people talk about CEOs and like all the highest people that are functioning in business being psychopaths.
Yeah.
It's because society rewards that.
It's not
like a mental disability. She doesn't get to lean into the trope of crazy black lady because it's too functional.
Yeah.
It works.
Yeah.
And so like that's why it becomes hard to diagnose in that way. Because society wants you to be more like this, if anything.
Did she ever get diagnosed, or did you ever speak to her about it? No, just like...
Yeah. No, I said, you're a legit psychopath, you know that, right? She goes, yeah, I probably am. And if you do the psychopath test, I don't know if you've ever read the psychopath test, it says, even if you do know it, you probably don't give a crap. And that's how you get like another point on the psychopathy test. Yeah. I was like... Freaking another point, boom, 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 boom
yeah, and that obviously clearly when you're like, yeah, maybe I am, is like, oh
yeah,
oh dear, okay. So how old were you when she got sick then? Like, what was your, yeah, what age were you when that, you were already estranged from her at that point? Were you sort of in your...
Yeah, so I was estranged around the age 27.
Okay.
From about age 5 to age 27, I was playing a primary role in emotional geography for just the household, relatives, life.
Yeah.
Like, just, I was the one that had the feels. And so if something, like, we grew up, we were like of the era of kids that were smacked and stuff like that. And so, which I understood the function of what it was. I don't have time to have a long conversation with you why you shouldn't run into the freaking street. But I do have time to clip you across the bloody head, you dumb child. And so I'm like, I understand the function of it,
yeah,
even in my youth. But we're going to have to mitigate how that happens. So once she comes with like a lead pipe, I'm like, you can't use that. You know, you know that movie we watched? Yeah. You know the baddie did that thing and you said that that's abuse and they're bad? Just take 5 seconds. And she looked at herself and she looked at the hand and she looked at me. She looked at us. She's like, yeah.
Wow.
She gave it a little test knock. Yeah, that's going to be too bad. Sorry, I was just piping outside. I wasn't thinking. And so I'm like, cool. Glad this is my responsibility. I'm 5. And like... And so, like, that was, like, I always had to have my head on a swivel.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was no chill. I always had to be informing people how to treat me. And little did I know that being a black lady, that would just be the mainstay anyway.
Yeah,
but,
yeah,
like, I was like, oh, I have to do this with everybody. Oh, okay, cool. In a way, it's kind of useful. I got a bit of training with my mother. But, like...
But hard.
But yeah, because there's no chill. You don't have that place of solace.
But I guess that place of like safety and calm that you come back to from, like you said, place of being a black woman in society that we've grown up in, going out externally and the pressures and the, you know, microaggressions and biases that you're dealing with there. You're not coming back home to a place where it's like, here you don't have that. Here you're safe.
Yeah, and real aggressions. I got my ass handed to me many times in Portishead for being black.
Mm.
I got beat up just all the time. And so I couldn't even, once I got beat up so bad in a forest on the seafront, there's like a line of trees by where the Lido is. I used to like to climb trees and look out to like Dinas Powers and Barry Island from there. You could see across, you could see across the, is it the Severn or whatever? Yeah, Severn, yeah. Isn't it? Yeah. And, and yeah, I was like looking across at my lovely Welsh buddies. Hello. So what, waving, seeing whether they could see me. I'm like, it's kind of far. They probably can't see anything. But like, yeah, but there was no like, when I go back home, I'm going to be comforted. So there's no point even getting into it. Mm. Because the only thing that's going to happen is that the radius of where I'm able to explore is going to come in. And there's going to be no comfort to balance that. And so I'd say I fell out a tree.
Wow.
And that's why I look like this. And that was life. Life was, you're alone. And you have to deal with this without anyone caring for you. And then I'm a black lady, so that just carries on.
Yeah.
And all I do is find like environments that seem normal to me. But because of the environment that I grow up in, the things that seem normal, that like even things that are appreciably slightly better still suck ass. Mm. And so, yeah, like the whole, that environment of like growing up and not really having, like if she understood there's a brand of like danger that like if someone's doing something and it's like a direct obvious threat and they're doing it out in the open, I could go, I'm gonna go get my mum. And they were all like, oh hell no. And so like if it was like a real thing that couldn't, like wouldn't, you know, that was happening literally around the corner and it wasn't like my radius could come in any way,
yeah.
It was just someone dropping the n-word yet again,
yeah.
I could go and get my mum. She put the fear of God into him because she did give a singular fuck. And that was useful. But like, there was not the level of comfort that you would ordinarily get. Mm. Like she just didn't understand how to give. And so like, I think I was always searching for that. And as time went on, like the other traits of having a complete absence of guilt and excessive narcissism would, which are constituent parts of psychopathy, would come to the fore to the point where it became impossible to be in her company. And that meant that I had to estrange myself. So like, I think I must have been like a size 24 and a good like 20 something stone. I was just eating my feelings and I had arthritis everywhere. I still do from that time. And I was just like, I really need to just take care of myself. Okay, so I'm gonna take 5 minutes because all of this is toxic.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm gonna try and heal myself. And hopefully by the time that I come back down from that size and this level of pain I'm in, both physical and emotional, and I have a handful of boundaries, because I'd never had any of those either.
Yeah, yeah.
That maybe then I'd be ready to deal with this. And I was in the late 20s at the time, and I was like, that's about a good time to make that next step. You know, I think we all, when we get into the late 20s, we start feeling 30 approaching. I call it the 29 panic. Like, yes. When you're like, I need to get my shit together.
Yeah.
All of this is not sustainable. And like, you make some adjustments for the next period of your life to be more sustainable than the life of your 20s, which is probably a good job because none of us could survive the life that we made for ourselves in the 20s.
No, and absolutely. So, you definitely need that.
Right. I can't drink that way anymore. No.
So did she get in contact with you to say she was ill? Like, did you, because if I can understand, you know, you've cleared, like you said, you've moved yourself away, you've built that little kind of barrier of boundary. And then when you find out someone's ill, that must be quite difficult to go, oh, now, you know, all those feelings, like, you know, her being your mother.
I didn't find out.
Oh, my goodness.
I had no idea. I found out just a lot later.
Wow.
And I had no idea. To kind of another kind of excerpt was in my life, in my interviews I've talked about in the past about being homeless. Mm. I called up my mother before I was homeless to say I'm about to be on the streets, like my friend had to go to hospital and for a long time and I'm not going to be able to keep up the bills in this place, and I've just about got a job about to come in, and that's going to square me up. But until that job comes in, like, I'm behind a month, so they're going to take my deposit. Yeah. I'm a student. Of course I'm behind a month. That's pretty standard for student life. Come on. Especially living in London. Like, I don't know anyone that wasn't a month behind.
No.
Like, the only people I knew that weren't a month behind were people whose parents were paying their bills or had, you know, two parents that were doctors, you know? And so, like, and she was like, oh, you'll probably be fine. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm telling you right now, I'm in abject danger. I need to come home. And she's like, oh, do you know what? I've made your room into an office now. Like, I just, do you know what? Like, it's going to be a real inconvenience to me. I'm like, it's going to be an even more inconvenience if I'm a dead body. And she's like, oh, you'll be fine. Don't worry about it. I'm like, I'm terrified. Anything?
Oh, Yola, that's so hard. That's so hard because it must have been hard for you to even reach out to be that you know, you've moved to London, you're trying to be independent, to hit the point where you're like, okay, I do have to ring you. Like, and I do.
And this wasn't even, and it wasn't even, and this wasn't when I was 27. This was like when I was 21.
Wow.
So we'd already had a 6 years previous to that of me trying to navigate the fact that if I was going to die, she would have done less than nothing to help that, to stop that from happening. Like, if I was going to be on the streets, beat to death for all of my belongings, then, and I was mugged.
Yeah, yeah, God.
And it was like, because I look like a freaking noob. Like, you walk around, look like a noob on the streets. They're like, come on. Dickhead. Like, I'm like, oh shit, of course.
Yeah.
Now I know. But day one, you're just like, you're surprised that it's even happened to you. And they're like, ha ha, fresh blood.
Yeah, God.
And so, like, so yeah, there I am looking like I'm 21 and I'm a freaking girl. Yep, like, come on. I'm lucky I wasn't sold into sex slavery, to be honest. And like, that honest, like, that was my environment that I was thrust into, because the people in my life at the time, friends that claimed they were friends, I called them to, oh, you know, you've got, I know you've got a spare room. Oh, it's just not convenient because blah, blah. I've just called my mother and she ain't got nothing for me. Oh, you know, well, like, everyone sucked.
Yeah.
That's hard. But it's because of the environment I grew up in.
Yeah,
I didn't
realise
how abnormal it was until I grew up in it.
Yeah, and with an environment like that, it's hard to then find people who do make you feel safe, because it would make you feel uncomfortable, right? Because you'd be like, what's this? Why are they being so caring? Like, that's not what you're used to.
Yeah, and it takes a while to learn that.
Yeah.
And so by the time I get to 27, I'm like, okay, I've traced the pattern now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm gonna need to just do something healthy for myself, because, like, she'll leave me to die part two.
Yeah.
Like, if I let it get to that point. So I need to just take care of myself for a bit. And maybe if I can't take care of anyone else if I can't take care of myself.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of where I got. So, like, I presume somewhere in that situation she was diagnosed, but I have no bloody idea.
Wow. So she didn't, she never told you and said this is happening at all?
No.
So when did you...
I actually never spoke to her again. She died before I got to speak to her.
Oh, God. Wow.
So me fixing myself was like, sorry, you don't get to do that either.
Wow. That's really hard.
Yeah. I had a lot of therapy, so I can talk about it. But
I was just going to say, you must have, because the way you are talking about it is, like, what you're talking about is a lot of trauma and so painful. And you are talking about it so...
Yeah.
Clearly as someone who's been able to process some of it, but obviously that it's so difficult. Been There, Done That is a show that tells the real life stories of the baby boom generation. Host Joanne Allen is a public radio veteran who talks with other boomers about the things they've experienced. Some stories are serious, like the interview Joanne did with her 80-year-old sister who was hospitalized.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
With COVID last year during the early stages of the pandemic. Some are poignant, like the retired cop who becomes emotional in defending the need to defund the police following the murder of George Floyd. Some are unbelievable, like the man who accidentally crashed his plane for the dumbest of reasons. And some are light-hearted, like the woman who found herself dancing in a bar run by the Boston mob after they made her an offer she couldn't refuse. Been There, Done That with Jo Ann Allen is available wherever you get your podcasts or at beentheredonethatpodcast.com. Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd. So did you just get a phone call saying she's died? Is that what happened?
Yeah. I got a LinkedIn message from...
What?
A person in that used to go to the same school as me who just reached out and said, oh, your mother's dead and the funeral is... dot, dot, dot. And... I was like, what? I was like, this is bullshit. But also, like Cartman, she used to do loads of kind of like crying wolf situations.
Yeah, yeah.
And so for years before the estrangement, like, she'd call me off tours. She used to call record companies that I was doing features with and say, she's not picking up. Why? I'm like, I'm doing a gig. I can't. Yeah. You're like, ha! And then, sorry, hi, mom, you're up. Like, it was like, why aren't you jumping when I ask how high?
Yeah, God. Do you think she found it hard then if you were kind of making a life for yourself, becoming successful? Do you think that was very difficult for her to deal with, that you were a stranger?
I wasn't even
okay
becoming successful. Yeah. I wasn't even successful. I was still dodging the bailiffs. It's just that, like... when this was happening, but by the time we were estranged, I'd managed to kind of like figure out via the power of dance music how to build a little nest egg for myself by being what I call the non-featured feature, where like I would sing the vocal, but I wouldn't get any of the PR because I didn't want to put my name out as something that didn't define exactly who I was. I didn't want to be genred. And so, like, I did songs for, like, Chase and Status, for Sub Focus, for Duc Dumont, one of which went to number 2 in the UK. Remember Won't Look Back? Won't look back, won't look back. Duh, duh, duh. That was me. Like, like all of that
wow
stuff. And the neighbouring rights, the royalty for the performance royalty was, like, when it gets into the top 5, it is tasty. And so, like, even if you're not, like, a writer on that, like, some yeah of them yeah I was a writer, some of them I was just a performer. But, like, the whole function of it was to keep me ticking over. And, in fact, that song, Won't Look Back, paid, and the song I said with Dibbit Sub Focus, paid to start me in music,
wow,
you know? And so,
so you get this LinkedIn message and you're like, what the fuck? What happened? Did you head back home? Did you make it to the funeral?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. I found out about it. I was living in Bristol at the time. I'm only, you know, 50 minutes away.
Wow.
And I got on my motorcycle and I like went to the funeral. Like, it was
how
like,
was that like, how was even walking into that service, you know, like, how I can't even imagine.
Well, it was like no one knew if I was going to turn out. Mm. And then I was there and there was hardly anybody there, because as funny as she was like, just your token black lady. And also, for the people that got the good side of her, they needed to get continual good side of her to be like, I have a connection to this woman. And so many other people would have either, like, not had enough of a connection to her.
Yeah.
Or they did, and then she said something dreadful. She had a really close friend who had a daughter who had learning difficulties, and she got bullied a lot. And I was friends with her because I was just like, we need to just protect people like who are being treated shit. Like, you know, if I can't get that, at least maybe I can deliver some of that. And that she said, she reiterated one of the terms that this kid used to be bullied by, and her mother just cut her clean out.
Yeah.
And they used to be tight. They were like besties. And then she just went over the line. And I don't know what she thought. She didn't understand the difference between light ribbing and something harrowing.
Yeah.
And which I was used to dealing with. Like, it was, none of it was easy. But, like, they didn't have to deal with that. I had to live with this woman. But they didn't. And so when I got into the funeral, it was like there weren't as many people there as there could have been.
Yeah.
Because everyone that claimed to care or that were like tight with her, like there weren't that many people that really were that connected. And so I was like, okay, well, there are some people here. So it's that's something. And yeah.
And who had organized it? Had just someone else had just dealt with it? Like you didn't, no admin got sort of thrown your way or anything like that?
No, not until later. Just other members, family were alerted, and yeah,
that must be so I mean, it's a lot, obviously it's a lot to deal with, is like not the phrase carry out of it. It's like it doesn't cover it, but I'm just trying to think, like,
no,
to just have to, yeah. And I think it is like you said, when obviously she did have issues in her communication, shall we say, and so like you said, those people that might have stayed around, then she's burning bridges like all over the place, including with her own daughter, you know. And then if you're at that generation that wouldn't go, wow, something's wrong with this person, I should get therapy, I should get help, just like, that's just how I am, it's a very lonely place to be. But that obviously doesn't excuse her behavior or how difficult it must be to be with.
No, and I think that's why I stuck around, and I always tried to be that person to lean on, because I was like, the alternative is really lonely.
Yeah.
And so,
but then that's,
I kind
so
of
hard
burned
for you to take that, all that pressure.
Yeah. And so I was like, I'm gonna be dead, and then she's gonna be alone anyway.
Yeah.
So you can't win here.
No,
if I'm dead, you're alone. If I maybe preserve myself, maybe I can re-enter with a bunch of therapy and some brand new boundaries, and maybe I can give this another go where things are different, where it's not you're providing the same thing and I'm providing the same thing. You know, it's like, I need to bring something different to this situation because you're not going to. And so that was the attempt. And to do that, because they wouldn't let me stop serving.
Yeah.
She wouldn't let me stop serving her. She called me for any random thing just to prove she had control over my life.
Yeah.
And so the cut had to be complete for me to be able to do it. I had to know where she was, but she couldn't know where I was. So that if I wanted to make a reconnection, I could put that out there. If she wanted to, she could. We'd been estranged before just because she just grown tired of being a parent.
Right.
And so I knew that, like, there was a risk that she'd just be like, ah, actually, I'm over it anyway, hashtag yawn. Like, so it was really, you know, just, it was a risk.
Yeah.
And I was aware that it was a risk.
And I think it's incredible that you did do that, really, because it's hard. It's hard, especially when a relationship with a parent is destructive. But if that's what you've known, it's like familiar food, isn't it? It's like, well,
yeah,
it tastes, I know it's not good for me, but that's what I've always eaten. So, and it takes so much strength and courage to pull away and go, I'm not, this is, like you said, I think what you said there was really interesting, of like, they aren't going to change what they're serving, so you have to change and be like, well, all I can't fix this person, I can't change them, all I can do is change myself, fix how I'm approaching it and all of that stuff. How did you begin the process of grieving? Because, you know, you didn't get to speak to her. You know, you were estranged at Tyke. Where do you even begin with grief in that situation?
So here's what I didn't realize when it came, like, to... So to sever a tie with a parent is grief.
Mm.
But I didn't realize what I had to do to be able to not react to a message or to not reach out. Because my whole life previous was just dropping everything and running.
Yeah.
And so, like, I had to reprogram how I felt. And I was like, I don't know how I can do that. I don't have the psychopath thing. Yeah. I can't just flip the switch. I'm disabled with these emotions. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to have to tell myself every morning that she's dead. So every morning I wake up and go, you're an orphan. She's dead. She's gone. You're alone. You're the last stop. It's down to you now. And every morning when I brush my teeth, I tell myself, and about a year into it, I really, like, got hit in the chest. Like it's just me. It's just me. I'm the last stop now. Like, and she was still alive.
Wow.
But in my mind, I was like, because then I went back to, I've only told you like a couple stories of there are hundreds, all equally hilarious and harrowing in equal measure, of just abuse.
Yeah.
Including like to touch on things, she used to put fake cream on my skin because she didn't want me to be dark. And she was like, no one likes dark people. Let's fade you. And stay out of the sun, blah, blah. Like, loads of people deal with that. But when I don't have a problem with being dark. Yeah, but I do. And so it was like, she put like really heavy makeup on me to make me fade out before that. And loads of weird stuff that's not right.
Yeah,
not even close to right.
not right at all. And I just think
not right.
That's,
and so like all of those things that are like, especially culturally in higher melanated cultures where fake cream is like a thing. I'm like, I know it's a thing that occurs, but none of that is right. And everyone is being damaged by their relationship to those products. Like, just to be like, you know, your actual hue, the way you came out is a problem. You're 9. We need to fade you. No. That's not okay. I still have to argue this with people. If they take a photo of me and they want to use a filter that makes me look like 5 shades lighter, I'm like, why are you doing this to me? I'm chocolate. I want to be chocolate. It's fun. It's really nice. I'm never going to age. Do you realize how powerful that is?
Oh, mate, when you already said that I was 27, I was like, what? She was 20. How old is she? What? Like, my brain was like,
I'm 38 now.
No.
Go on, take a look.
Oh, my God.
Find a line on this bitch. It ain't happening. Not today, not never. But, but I don't want to be any other kind of brown.
No.
I've always been like this. And
that was
great.
Obviously so wrapped up in her own issues, I'm guessing.
Yeah, she hated herself.
Yeah.
To the very core, she hated so much about herself. And I'm aware of that. I knew she hated herself.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm cute. I don't know what your problem is.
I think that's really interesting what you're saying about the estrangement. And I've talked to other guests who've been estranged, and they said a similar thing, that the grief is, they are already, you've already lost what should be a parent. You haven't had the parent. So you're already in that process. And although that, of course, when someone dies, it's different. You're already on the journey to it because you don't have them in your life in the way that you want to have them in your life because of their behavior or because of your relationship. And so I think that's, I've heard that before, of like having to just, in your head, they're dead because they are in a way to you in that relationship. And so it must be really hard to kind of find a place for for the grief, because you're already in grief. When did you go to therapy? Was it like after she died, or had you already begun that process?
Oh, it was before.
Good.
Obviously, you don't get through any of this with any sense of joy without a whole load of therapy.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I had to go to therapy on the NHS and anywhere I could find it. From like even like cognitive behavioral therapy, and the idea to kind of view situations from like above, and the idea of removing yourself from a situation.
I did
everything to get as many different angles on my grief. I think my grief has been perpetual because I when I was five and I had to tell her not to hit me with lead piping, I was in grief.
Yeah, because that's like, not what you, not your mum should do, you know? That's not what mums are meant to be, yeah.
No, and I wasn't supposed to be that aware.
Yeah.
I was supposed to be more blissfully ignorant than I was allowed to be. And I definitely had more than my fair share of times of blissful ignorance still, but I was aware that I was maybe a notch less than I needed to be.
Yeah.
And I was like, I really like to just be dumber right now.
Yeah.
Like, it would be real great to not have to be aware of this, but I am. And
gosh,
so, like, when it comes to the need of therapy, I just always just try to keep abreast of everything. I try to talk as much as I could about my life experience, whether anyone wanted to hear it or not. I just try to kind of just be aware of my mental state and to do things that at least the worst case scenarios were like I was being vocal and always on a quest to find people who would want to kind of speak to me about like their lives and that we had an exchange. And as time went on, I found appreciably more people that would do that. But like in these weird codependent relationships where you are like some brand new narcissist's bestie and they'd listen to you. They'd listen to all of your problems as long as you'd serve them for all eternity.
Yeah.
So I had like a string of like friends who were like, all you have to do is serve me forever. That's all it is. Not too much to ask, is it?
Like, I mean, it's kind of fair. Like, you know, if you think about it, I'm great. So doesn't seem that
you
bad
know,
a deal. Yeah.
Yeah, right? I'm pretty awesome. You get to be around me whilst I'm being awesome. All you have to do is serve me. And I will listen to anything that you have to say, kind of, before I make it about me. And like, and that was more than I had at the time.
Yeah.
And so
But of course, after what you've been through, like, I'm not surprised. And I think what's commendable is that you have the self-awareness now and then, obviously, to be like, oh, I see what's happening. I see this pattern. Like, because there's so many people who really struggle to get themselves out of what situations like that. And like you said, you were born into that. You didn't, you know, you just arrived. Like, you didn't do anything or like,
no.
It's just the way the cards were dealt.
It was always, so it was always going to be this way. I was always going to find people that wanted to have that, the controlling element like my mother had, that had the neglecting element, that had the mind games element, that had the narcissistic element. Because all of that was normal. I was always going to find these people. And I was always going to find other people that told me, because of society, that that's the best that I could expect. Because society doesn't, certainly not in England, I don't know, outside of anything that Issa Rae or Michaela Cole have produced, I don't remember seeing a bunch of shows where there was a black lady just having a regular time.
No. And I think, especially England and Michaela Cole and what's happened recently. And that's really recently, you know, like that's like
really
the last
recently
5 years, I think Chewing Gum must have been. And then obviously I Want to Destroy You was last year. So like, it's a very recent change in our culture, definitely. How do you feel now? Like, obviously you're having like this incredible success. How does that feel? Like, is that hard because of what you've come from and because of those voices? Or have you had enough therapy that you're like, I can embrace this and this is exactly what I deserve?
Well, a bit of both, to be honest. Like, I still struggle to reward myself for like things. And I think partly it's because I can see through some things. So when great things are happening, I celebrate different things. So I celebrate, like, I put together a band. I had time during the pandemic to just make friends here in America, and that really see me. And, like, I was able to do that. So right up until, like, my mother's funeral, I don't think I was able to do that. Mm. And I think once she was actually gone, I was released from this mission to fix myself for her.
Yeah.
And I was able to just to start doing my life. And, like, I was like, well, this isn't a dress rehearsal. And you'll know this. I say this to anyone that's lost a parent. The size of a casket is disappointing.
Yeah.
When you look at it, you're like, why is that so tiny?
Yeah.
Because their personality, you think they're bigger.
Yeah.
Or taller or broader. And then you look at it and you're like, oh, well, that's a freaking letdown. Are you kidding me? This is it? This is the big old dang, 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 dang. This is the thing that, this is a whimper. Yeah. Are you kidding me? This is BS. This ain't me.
I think especially if you've had a parent that was like you, I love what you said, like she was an event. Like my dad was also like, the way I describe it was like, you knew he was in the room. Like, you know, it wasn't someone you're like, oh, how long have you been there? You were like, as soon as it was at the door, you're like, oh, there he is. And I think if you've had a parent like that, and then you see, like you said, that I totally understand that coffin being like, God, is that it? Like, because when they were alive, it did not feel like that. It felt much louder. Like, it was up to 11 with that person. And now you realize the sort of flattening of death that, you know, it is just a body. And yeah, that's what you're left with.
Yeah, and it seems like such a kind of, again, back to South Park, a South Park ending, like a real like situation.
Yeah,
like there's nothing, like it's such a damp squib. Mm. Like for anyone that's had, like, especially for the big personality people, it's like, wow, that is BS.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, so if all of everything that's a big old deal in life boils down to that freaking pitiful situation, I better get to living yesterday. Yeah. And so I was like, well, thank God for therapy. Glad I started that early. Because I don't know if I would have drawn that from this situation, but thankfully, because of therapy, I did. And I was like, woo, bitch, not today. And so I was like, yeah, I really, really need to just think, what do I really want from this thing called life? Because clearly none of us are getting out of this thing alive.
Yeah.
And we're not supposed to. And so that's when I started imposing some boundaries. I must start making some serious enemies up in this bitch, because you know what happens when you decide to have some boundaries.
Yeah.
People are like, but I could ride you like a prize pony all the way to the store. And now I can't.
How dare you?
You uppity lady. How very dare you decide that you have agency.
You don't
get to have agency. I've never seen a movie or a TV show or even a bloody advert that shows you having a nice time. You don't get to have a nice time.
Yeah, that's
the
not
most
the
you can hope for. No, the most you can hope for is to be accepted by some merciful bros who will only ride you slightly on the way to the bank. And therein lies your life. Enjoy it. At the point of her funeral, I was riding my bike home, and that's when Break the Bow came into my head from the record.
Wow.
Like, immediately, it was like I had been stunted creatively, obviously. I'd been surrounded by people who would happily leave me for dead, and did, more importantly.
Yeah.
And when I was homeless, and when, like, it felt like that I was finally going to be able to finish my grieving process. So I started it probably around 27 and finished it around, oh goodness gracious, yeah, about age 30.
Wow.
Yeah, I'd say so. About, I probably finished it around age 30, age 31.
And do you feel finished? Do you feel like, because I feel like it's very ongoing, like things still happen that set me off, and I'm mostly fine, but like, I feel like but do you feel like it's just a thing that is done with?
Like you say, mostly.
Mostly,
like, you know, it's like, it's mostly all there, but like, you can still have like a moment, but I think it's hard to know, because yeah. I think that anything, like, you can still have moments where anything that's sad makes you cry. Yeah. I could cry because a dog's freaking being taken care of someone on bloody Super Vet or some yeah. crap, you know, things still make me emotional. Mm. Like, I don't think I'm ever not going to react to things emotionally. The one thing I recognize as this isn't just like, oh, that's sad, and that like gets me in a moment, is that the never really having had a proper mother experience, and knowing that I will never have that in that biological way. And it's not out of like, they didn't know me, or it's like, no, you had the full experience and you still didn't have the full experience.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't leave you. It definitely gets easier as you get older, because you less need that figure. And I think some people, like, they recognize that you didn't have that, and then they try and fill that in. But you're like, I'm grown. Yeah. I don't need a teat to suckle from anymore. Like, don't try and do that to me.
Yeah.
Honestly, I just want to be seen by people. And but it doesn't leave you. That doesn't leave you. That's what it is.
That's so interesting.
Like, that kind of need.
Yeah, because I interviewed, do you know Dawn O'Porter? She's a, like, she used to be a TV presenter and writer, British.
Yeah.
She lost her mum when she was 6, and she said the same thing, that she doesn't mind mothering people. She feels like she's very good at that. But she says, as soon as somebody starts trying to mother her, she's like, what are you doing? Because she just isn't a feeling that she, you know, had a lot, because her mum died when she was so young. And I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because what you're describing is like, the feeling of sadness is there, and then sometimes people try and fix that. And it's not something that needs fixing. It's just something that is. And if someone can accept that about you and be like, that's just something that she carries, that's her pain, and she's dealt with it, and it will always be there, rather than like, oh, let me mother you because you didn't have it. Like, that's, like you said, you've worked through so much and you've been through so much. You're not going to suddenly turn around and be like, oh, yes, you can mother me. Like, that's not how a brain
works. Hey, rando, I literally just met you. You can, like, for people that I do have a longer standing connection with, I am a bit of a mummy lover. If I've dated somebody, their mum still's like, how's Yana? I still have friends, people that I dated their son, I still talk to their mum on Facebook. Like, so, like, I clearly have, like, this, like, yes to the mothers. Yeah. Like, I still, like, go towards that. But you can't just elect yourself into my life.
Yeah.
And, like, I think that's something that can happen sometimes. People go, oh, I'd love to have you as a daughter. And I'm like, cool, I don't know you.
It's late for that. Like, I've been through that. Yeah, I think especially when you've been through stuff as a young person, you do have to develop, like, a very strong practicality and quite a toughness. And those things also are useful. Like, they also can then be useful. So they're hard to, like, drop, because they also help you get by in situations. So,
I know.
It's that.
I just end up, it becomes more about, it's more that, like, people used to weaponize my emotions. Mm. And so they'd be like, oh, you feel things and you have this real sense of conscience. Let's use that. Yeah. And so, like, it was never really like, I never got a break from being a person that feels. And so, I won't let anyone elect themselves into my life. I'll be like, this is about consent, and I have to be part of that decision for you to be in my life, in my space. And then when you are, then I'm ridiculously sentimental and I receive all adoration and give in equal measure. That's how I function. But I just, it's less, like a not really being with willing to be mothered, because there'll be three mothers that, if they do hear this, will be like, I'm mother living shit out of you. I know.
we don't want that. Like, if you're in the category, like, you pass the test, Yola still thinks that's fine. Like, we're not kicking anyone out.
Yeah, we're good. No one's out that's already
in. Yeah. I'm very sympathetic.
Once you're in, you're in.
Yeah, once you're in, you're in. And then sometimes I think, if someone clicks with me straight away, they'll be like, oh, she's so friendly to everyone. I'm like, no, you're in. Like, you don't realize this is special. And then they might be flippant. I'm like, do you not realize the club is tiny? There's like six people in here. You've got in. Like, and now you're in. And it takes them a while to be like, oh, I just thought you were really nice to everyone. I'm like, no. Like, friendly. But
yeah.
Once someone's in and they've got there and they're part of you, like, yeah, you're a paid up member now. That's it, you're staying.
Yeah, that's it. I say this to people. I was talking to Megan Coleman, my drummer in the US. She was like, I'm like, you're stuck with me now, bitch. And she's just like, I'm like, I love you. It's too late.
Yeah, it's too late.
Like, I could have just liked you, but now, when I'm dead, you're free.
Yeah, okay? Yeah. Yeah, I know that
feeling. But I'm not like that. And the number of times, like, you know, I've just kind of moved house again and people go, ooh, I hear you've moved into the area. Let's do this. Or what we could, let's do this and blah, blah. I'm like, sweetie, have we had a conversation even?
I don't know if you've made it to the list. You're on the other list.
Like, you're on the, you're totally fine, but
yeah,
like...
Yeah. Yola, I could talk to you for so long, but I know that you have to go and do big, important things. Thank you so much for talking to me about Margaret and your experience. And just, I just want to say hats off to you, because I just think the music that you created out of that situation is...
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So beautiful, and obviously no one wants to have trauma so they can make great music, but the way that you've dealt with it is just, yeah, hats off to you, because I can just tell how much you've worked through and how much you've been through. So thank you so much for taking the time to speak to me. I really appreciate it. You can follow Yola on Instagram and Facebook at I Am Yola Official. That's YOLA. And you can follow her on Twitter at I Am Yola. Her new album, Stand For Myself, is out now, available to buy. It's amazing. And she has another album from before that called Walk Through Fire, which is also incredible. I thoroughly recommend you buy them or stream them, download them, whatever way you are listening to music these days. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast. The show was recorded remotely. Yola was in Nashville. I was in London. It was edited by Kate Holland, and the music was provided by the Glue Ensemble. And remember, you are not alone.